Horror movies are more than just empty thrills. They are a mirror that reflects the darker sides of our culture and our psyche. Each episode, we will go beyond the first cut and discuss the themes and topics that hide below the surface.
I'm Dave, Professor of Communication.
And I'm Vince, Professor of Psychology. Welcome to A Dark Impression.
Welcome, everyone, to our first regular episode of season 3. This season, we're going to take things a little differently. So instead of focusing on a kind of specific topic with an older and a newer offering that fits that general theme, we're going to go for different questions, bigger questions, more open questions that allow us to discuss a variety of movies instead of focusing on two. We've covered a lot of different monsters or different types of scary movies. So now we had a chat and we thought it would be interesting to delve into a different aspect that kind of permeates all scary movies, which is a little unusual. We typically think of scary movies as this visually appealing or visually evocative style of movie making. We all remember the makeup for Reagan in The Exorcist, or the motion of the knife in Psycho, or we remember the TV in Poltergeist. So it's typically, when we think of movies, we think of visual medium. But scary movies would not be as scary if it wasn't for a very important dimension, which is the soundtrack. Whether we're talking about music or we're talking about the sounds that are used by the production to evoke emotions, this dimension, which is not as egregious, is still so fundamental to us being scared. And so today, I guess I would like to explore that dimension with you. What is it about sounds that is actually pretty, that can get pretty scary? How is it used in movie making to create some good effects? What are some memorable aspects of the sound? What's the history of us using the sound? And do we see any recent trends, or do we see any kind of innovative use of sound or even silence in some of the newer offerings? So yeah, that's what I would like to discuss. As a side note, if there is some background noise, those are just the plows, because for once, it's actually snowing outside, which is lovely.
I think you bring up a really good point that when you talk about how integral it is to creating a good scary movie, without sound, you're just looking at an image, and even the scariest movie is not going to be as effective.
Yep.
Without a good sound design. So before sync sound was invented, so we're looking at, or when it was popularized, we're looking at the late 1930s. Horror film had existed since the very early days of film. And I know that I've mentioned this before, but the first horror film I know of is from 1896. Film is being toyed with starting around 1895. So you're not looking at a very big jump from people saying, hey, look at this really neat thing, to, hey, maybe we can scare some people with it. It happens pretty quickly. And through silent film, silent cinema, you can see a number of instances of horror films, including one of my personal favorites, Nosferatu, which is being remade. I think, what is it, this year or next year or something like that, by Robert Eggers?
I think so, yeah. End of 2024, I think, or early 2025.
That would be a great midwinter release. Right. I guess I digress, but I'm really excited to see what he does with it. And they work to an extent, but they're not as scary as they could be. And they tend to fall a little bit flat, I think, with modern audiences, or with general modern audiences, people who aren't looking at it for the filmmaking aspect, but for the horror aspect.
Agreed.
They tend not to be as effective.
Yep.
Once you get into sync sound, though, in 1930s, you're starting to see horror films really start to become their own. And a lot of filmmakers at the time are trying to figure out how do I use sound to make the film more scary. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it comes off a bit goofy. You know, I think the Universal Monsters series, you know, Dracula, yes. Dracula and Boris Karloff's Everything Else, they're fun. Like they're campy, but I can't imagine people going to watch Dracula or Wolfman now and being like, oh, that scared me. I thought that was real, because they're still experimenting. It's a little bit tacky. And I think that's where the charm of that type of film lies. Where you really start to see it come into its own is after World War II. So World War II, there's not a lot of stuff being made, but late 1940s, you're seeing a lot of more modern sound design being incorporated into these films, 1950s, especially the 1960s. You know, one of my favorites, Rosemary's Baby, which treats horror much more as a drama than anything else. And it doesn't go over the top with the sound effects, the bad guys that sound somewhere vaguely Eastern European, you know, the wolves howling in the background, stuff like that. It's more the noises of every day, which I think makes for a more enriching horror experience, because then you start to hear the creak on the floorboards, the wind or the trees tapping against your windows, and the sounds that during the daylight are fine, at night suddenly they become ominous and they become somebody sneaking into the house or coming to get you or whatever. And, you know, in the movies it often is that. But in real life it can also play with our imagination. I know that there's been a number of times still that I'm laying in bed sleeping and I hear a creak from downstairs and I'm like, somebody's in the house. And I know there's not. You know, our dog goes bananas when, you know, somebody comes within, I don't know, 500 feet of the house, but it's still like it's in the back of your head. So I think that you're seeing that realism being brought into sound design in the 1960s, and that makes a huge impact. And that really continues through today. I think the most effective horror films today often rely on realism to create the sound design within the film.
Yeah, I like that you mention your dog, because I don't need to ring the bell when I come by and see you. She just knows that I'm arriving and starts to go bananas. But I think that it's interesting because, yes, there is this whole segment of movie making history where all you had was music. And I mean, we could have someone who's an expert in music theory talk to us about the different keys and the different progressions that are used in music to evoke different types of emotions. And I think happiness and sadness and to a certain degree, tension or anxiety can be generated by music. But it's, if you're watching a movie and there's a visual stimulation and there's also music at the same time, I don't think it's as potent as having a visual and then actual sounds that are tied to the visual. We tend to think of, I mean, we tend to enjoy the end product of perception, which is what we see is what we think is out there, but we don't realize how much our nervous system has to work to generate just vision. And if you just look at a human brain, the amount of real estate that is used to just process visual stimulation is huge. By definition, we are visual mammals. That's the primary sense that we use to process information. But our field of vision is limited to what's in front of us. It's not even 180 degrees. It extends a little lower versus higher because we tend to deal with things that are on the ground more than things that are up in the air. So our field of view is not a perfect circle, but it's focused on in front of us. We're not prey animals that need to constantly scan our environments. So both of our eyes are on the same surface of our head, and they're pointing forward. So that's where the auditory sense kind of comes in to compensate, is it offers us this kind of detection mechanism for everything that's around us. And you were saying, like, you're in your bed at night and you hear a creak or some kind of noise. It's there to attract your attention. Ultimately, it's there to attract your visual attention. But we have this primary system for auditory sensation that's really important for echolocation, or just locating things in space, is, do I hear a noise from my left or from my right? Where should I start running? So that's really one of the bigger functions of the auditory system. And it is connected. We have this threat detecting system also when you look at the human brain. And this is shared with evolutionarily shared various species, but we have this capacity to detect threats. And there are direct connections between auditory areas of our brain and those threat detecting areas. So it's one of the things that should be tapped into if you want to evoke any kind of fear or any kind of anxiety. Sound is such a good way to go, even though, and especially enjoyed in movie theaters where you get this surround sound. They can really play nowadays with that to tie different sounds to images or to make you think you're only seeing a certain aspect of the whole field of view, but you now hear a sound that is not being shown. So, and the character might not be able to see it. I think that was also part of the success of the found footage style or the found footage approach, right, which is you're limiting the capacity to process visually. So now you can increase the amount of stimuli that you're offering through sounds, and you can scare people even more because now all you get is a blurry image. You don't know exactly what it is, but you can hear it. And I think there's something terrifying about hearing something and not being able to see it or not being able to visually process it so to understand it. And I think that's been one of the things, one of the evolution of sound that's been really interesting. And beyond that, you have those association areas that are there to tie stimuli from more than one sense. So what's visual and then what's auditory. And you can use that in movies where, why is it so scary to see little Reagan, a 13-year-old girl, have this kind of super deep voice? Because the sound doesn't match the image. And there's something that is uncomfortable with that, is we learn to associate sources of sound, the visual aspect of that, with the actual sound. When that doesn't happen, it's weird. Our brain kind of detects an error and goes like, wait, that image should produce this sound, and now it's not. So there's something wrong now. And our brains are, as much as they like to go on autopilot, they also have this weirdness detector, is when does the thing that you're expecting not happen? And that's when we kind of perk up. And I think that's been used a lot in horror movies. Having a little kid with like this big scary voice or something like that, that's always a little terrifying, which is also why a lot of people find ventriloquist to be a little creepy and scary. Shout out to anyone who is a ventriloquist out there. So yeah, I think
That's a fact.
Definitely. Hot take. I think ventriloquists may be creepier than clowns. Agree or disagree?
Disagree.
Okay.
I think that depends on the clown.
Depends on the ventriloquist.
But, yeah, I guess you're right.
I think if you're more tech savvy, we should create a poll to see what people think. Ventriloquists or clowns, which is creepier?
Someday.
A ventriloquist clown. Blend the two.
Oh, to a point you were making a few minutes ago about senses. I think the more that films incorporate different senses, including spatial awareness, if we're thinking about like VR films, the more elevated horror can be. So, you know, if we're able to move around within a physical space or spin and see what's behind us, that creates a different element. If we can, you know, I remember Disney had a film when I was a kid and they would like blow air on the back of your neck and stuff like that. And it was like an adventure film. I forget what it was. It was, you know, 10 minutes long or something. But I remember being like, whoa, that's crazy. So now, you know, imagine watching Alien and when the breath hits Ripley, it hits the side of your face.
Are you?
You know, I think that would, the more you can bring senses into it, the more immersive it's going to be.
Are you sure that was part of the movie and not just someone behind you that was, you know, just breathing down your neck?
Yeah, now that I think about it. No, it was pretty neat. Yeah. So they had like these little air jets coming out the back of the seat and also on like your ankles. So you could like, they would blow air at various points. The seats, as I recall, the seats vibrated. Yeah. It was a really neat ride, right? But this was before VR, so you weren't wearing a headset, you were in a theater. But now imagine that when you're able to turn to your left, turn to your right, turn around.
Yeah, I wonder how much of that is going to be able to keep you engrossed in what's happening and how much is going to be so much that you kind of disconnect. Because I think we're able to process like visual and auditory sensation as well. But if you include somatic touch-based stuff, I don't know. I would be curious to see if in the next 50 years we'll see that as an increase or a new developing market. There's all of the that can actually literally shake your viscera. So you perceive bass sometimes in your abdomen and torso just because of the vibration. Can they develop subwoofers that would be able to really give you a visceral sensation and really enhance the jump scares that we've seen? Which is, I mean, a good jump scare is a combination of sudden visual and a good clashing, attention-grabbing auditory stimulation. So could they move past two senses? I don't know. That'd be interesting to see. But I mean, we've been talking and giving a lot of examples. I want to hear, what are your top memorable sounds or music from different movies that you think are like emblematic or
So I think for me, and this probably won't come as a surprise to any of my students that are listening, Jaws is probably, I think, one of the best examples of music in horror, because the John Williams, like, dun-dun, dun-dun, it's just, first of all, it's super iconic. Even if you haven't seen the movie, you know the sound from Jaws. The other thing about it, too, is it helps with, well, the problems with the shark on set. So the shark never worked correctly. So once you associate that, like, just genius little motif of music, every time it repeats, you don't have to see the shark to know that the shark's there. So they associate it once, twice early in the film, and then it doesn't matter. If we hear it, the shark's there. If we see the shark, we hear it every time, but then we don't have to see the shark. And so that's really, I think, really cool, because you don't have to spend the money and you don't have to overshow this, you know, mechanical beast that doesn't work correctly 90% of the time. And it helps you actually, I think, make the movie scarier, because then it puts it in the viewer's imagination. So you hear the sound. Well, how far away is the shark? If you see it, oh, it's 500 feet away. That's not, I mean, that's scary. You know, it's going to eat you, but it's not as scary as if it's 2 feet away. So in your imagination, you're thinking, oh, the shark's coming up. The shark's coming up right now. And that really, I think, helps play up the fear level, right? Because you can't see the shark. You're just like the characters who are above the water or on top of the water. They can't see the shark either. So you're very much in the same boat, I guess, no pun intended, but I kind of like that one. And that little bit of sound does so much for the film, and it really makes it iconic. And you'll see that in other films too. You had mentioned a minute ago, Tubular Bells,
yes,
which is an awesome example.
Yeah, so there's two examples that come to mind. One, so you have Jaws, which is all about the lower pitch, lower range bass, bum, bum, bum. And then you have at the opposite end, the stabbing noise from Psycho. That's also super emblematic of the scary movie genre. And yes, Tubular Bells from The Exorcist, that kind of ominous little, I don't know if it's piano or keyboard. Most people know it as the theme from The Exorcist. It's actually a full album from Mike Oldfield from 1975, I think.
It's bells.
Yes. Yes.
It's bells.
But it's not the Tubular Bells.
Tubular Bells.
No, the Tubular Bells happen at the end of the first movement. It's essentially like two tracks of 20 minutes, but it is so good. It fits perfectly that really ominous scene, and it's like forever tied to that movie. You hear that melody, and you know that there's something creepy that's about to happen. I think that was like one of the perfect choices. The other thing that I keep thinking, I remember seeing a video about how they generate sounds for special effects. And I think they use bell peppers for that crunching sound that we hear all the time when something breaks. And I've been...
Yeah, they'll use celery, pine cones, yes, that type of stuff.
Which means I love to cook with those, well, not pine cones, but like celery and bell peppers, just because of the sound. Makes me feel like I'm on a scary movie set. But yeah, it's actually pretty cool, the amount of research that goes into finding something that makes a sound that, when tied to an image, amplifies the emotional aspect of that visual stimulus. I would love to sit down and have a conversation with one of the sound effect people and just ask them what their process is.
Foley artists is what they're called. It's a specific job, Foley artists.
Thank you. So I want to sit down with one of them and just ask them what their process is. Do they go to a grocery store and buy like a ton of produce and rip those apart and record that until they find like the perfect noise for breaking a few ribs? Like, what's the process? I want to learn that.
Yeah, it's that's one of those jobs that I'll tell my students in class when we talk about it. If somebody were to say you can have any job you want in Hollywood, I would have that with an intern to clean up after me. And that would be, it would just be such a fun job. So they're not, sometimes they're creating a sound library, but a lot of times they're doing it on the fly. So they'll have their celery and their bell peppers and they're watching somebody say whatever, step in a bear trap again and again and again. And then they time up cracking the celery as the bear trap snaps shut. And then they get a mouse trap and they snap a mouse trap shut at the same time that the bear trap snaps shut or something like that.
So cool.
So you get all of those sounds layered again over and over and over again.
Love it.
Yeah, it's really, really neat. And then some distortion, now it's all digital, so they'll add effects to the sounds, lower the pitch, raise the pitch, delay, reverb, whatever, to create a sound that is more indicative of, you know, a mouse trap doesn't sound like a bear trap, but, you know, if we have our eyes closed, we might be able to pick it out as a mouse trap, but when we watch a bear trap go with some slight modifications, that mouse trap can sound more like a bear trap.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you're seeing that kind of experimentation still today, right? It's not that, oh yeah, we want a bone breaking. It's always going to be celery. It's always going to have these effects put on, right? It's a difference between if it's a femur or, you know, your whatever finger bone or something like that, they're going to sound different. So you have these artists playing around, and that even goes back to the Foley sounds from the days of radio. When, if you remember the Monty Python skit, you have like an old Western on radio and somebody's clomping horses with, you know, a split in half coconut.
Yes.
And so you have people doing that because it sounds better than just saying, I'm going to ride my horse.
Right. And more practical than getting a horse in studio.
Right. Walking around. Yes. Studio. Galloping. Yes.
I don't think that scary movies would be as scary if it wasn't for those iconic lines. I think they add such an interesting dimension.
Yeah.
And just the sound of hearing that pitch, that voice, say those specific words, because they're here, could be in pretty much any movie, but having this little girl, Carrie Ann, say that, or having any kind of the lines, essentially, that Reagan says in The Exorcist, that without that, I don't think the movies would have been as interesting. And now you get movies like The Witch or Midsommar or A Quiet Place that are now banking less on big sounds and more on strange sounds or silence. And I think that's an interesting development in the last few years, is how much there's been a conscious effort in building tension through silence, something that we are not used to anymore. There's sound and music everywhere. And now we generate anxiety by having none of that. I think, that's one of the things that struck me the most about The Witch is the quiet.
Yeah, I like that too. I think it's nice. It's refreshing to not have wall to wall, you know, I guess like wall of sound, sound instead of music, where it's like overwhelming amounts of sound. But yeah, sometimes there's those types of moments are saved for when they're really warranted.
Yep.
And the day-to-day life, a lot of the other moments tend to be really quiet. And that's, I like that. I think that's nice. It really accentuates the louder, kind of more aggressive moments within the films. Yep.
I think it's stepping away from, I think you find the best recipe to scare people by defying expectations. And I think we are in a moment where we expect noise. So to have silence being used, it's a great tool to generate tension, which you can then resolve by a surprising visual and a surprising sound. The same way that the one jump scare in the car in Haunting of Hill House. If you haven't seen the show, stop it now and go and see the show. But that one jump scare in the car, I think it's in episode 7, the second to last episode. It was a conversation in a car with a very dim sound, and then boom, you have the ghost that appears. That was just super well crafted by using silence and kind of a muffled, ordinary level. No music, nothing to help build tension. Tension is there because things sound way too normal.
Right. Yeah. Well, hey, this was a lot of fun to talk about. It's one that I think about. I think about a lot when I'm watching scary movies. So I'm glad that you suggested we do this one. And so we'll hopefully be putting out some more episodes soon.
As downloaded and listened to our episodes, we see the count. We're happy to see you still listening to our stuff. And we have a few ideas for this season. So stay tuned.
Yeah, stay tuned. Thank you, everybody. All right.
Thanks for taking the time to listen to A Dark Impression. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Rating and reviews make the world a scarier place. Consider leaving one wherever you get your podcasts. A Dark Impression was produced and edited by Vince and Dave. All movies are copyright their respective sources. Music is from Adobe Stock. All rights reserved.